Next Chapter Podcasts.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Bowie, Dylan, Marley. You've heard the names and maybe you've heard their songs, but what about the stories behind the records that made titans of music like these so universally loved and important? Join me, Josh Adam Myers, host of The 500, as each week I go through a different album from Rolling Stone Magazine's 500 Greatest Albums list from 2012 with an incredible lineup of comedians, actors, and musicians talking about how the music has impacted their lives. New episodes of The 500 come out every Wednesday. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, this is Sally Kate Holmes, Managing Director of Next Chapter Podcasts, here to tell you about a pretty cool new offering from our friends at Apollo Podcasts. You can now find the Play On Podcasts on Apollo Plus, a creator-owned platform where every subscriber helps audio fiction creators such as us. You can listen ad-free, early access to exclusives, behind-the-scenes supercuts, and more on Apollo Plus. On top of all that, 70% of the revenue on Apollo Plus goes directly to creators. Join Apollo Plus through the Apollo Podcasts app or by going to apollopods.com.
Hi, my name is Michael Goodfriend, and I'm the executive producer of the Play On Podcasts at Next Chapter Podcasts. I'm here today with Lawrence Schreck. He is an award-winning composer born and raised in Montreal. He earned a degree in music composition at Berklee College of Music in Boston and did additional studies at Eastman School of Music in Rochester, New York. He is an incredible musician and, I would say, musical explorer who's written over 200 scores for feature films, TV movies, documentaries, and television series in myriad styles, including ambient, intimate, roots, world music, and large orchestral scores. He also is the composer of the music and the songs that permeate The Tempest, the series that you've been listening to on Next Chapter Podcast. It is my honor to have Lawrence with me here today. Lawrence, welcome to the bonus content series for The Tempest at Next Chapter Podcast.
Thank you for having me. It was a privilege to be part of it.
When did you know you were a musician?
I think when I was about 16, I wanted to write film music. And I don't know where that came from or why. I wanted to tell stories with music in some fashion. And I have no idea how that emerged. Except, I started to play piano around then and it just seemed to fit. I don't know why.
Was that your first instrument, piano? And you started as a teenager. You didn't start as a child.
Yes, I had an incident where I broke my back and I wasn't allowed to play sports. So I started to play piano. It seemed like a safer direction.
You were able to play the piano with a broken back?
Well, I was in a body cast, but I could still move my hands. Yeah.
Is it a subject you want to get into, how the accident happened?
No, as a Montreal kid, I was tobogganing.
Of course. One of the most common accidents in Montreal, from what I understand. Toboggan accidents. Yeah. How long did it take you to recover? Did you ever fully recover?
Oh, I fully recovered, but it was a gift because it changed the direction of my life, and I'm grateful.
You had been an athlete prior to that, you said?
Let's just say the shortest book in history is Jewish Sports Heroes. I was not one of them, okay? Career was not in that direction.
And so you started learning the piano, and did you, at the time, were you just improvising freely on keyboard and learning?
Yeah. I mean, I liked a lot of pop music and blues and rock and roll, and I just started studying with someone who was a good fit, and he had gone to Berklee College, and I went, oh, well, if Leon could do it, maybe I could do it. So,
And what was his name? Leon.
Leon Aronson.
Would we know any of Leon Aronson's music? Does any of it
No,
exist?
Leon was a Montreal composer, and at the time when I met him, he was music director of Hair. So this is how long ago it was. And I figured if he could sit around looking at nude women on stage and smoke pot, I that's a job for me.
Which hair? Was it the hair on Broadway?
No, in Montreal.
And he was the music director. What exactly does a music director do?
He makes sure that the performance is right, the arrangements are good, the vocals are, everyone's got their parts, everyone's got their, understands their what they need to do, and he manages the whole thing. It's exactly what a producer does in a podcast, but specifically for the musical entities. So vocals, musicians, performance, yada yada.
And you went from piano to any other instruments, or did you just stay with the piano?
No, I mean, I stayed on piano. I'm a piano player. I'm not a pianist, and which is a huge distinction.
Can you draw that out for us? What is the distinction between a pianist and a piano player?
A pianist you want to hear, a piano player you don't. I can get around, and but I would never hire myself.
So you the instrument, the piano, becomes a tool for you.
Yeah, it's a writing tool for me. My instrument is a pencil, or in the old days was a pencil, I wrote music.
And do you remember the first thing you wrote?
When I was 16, 17, I would start hearing melodies, and it would be like, oh, I had no idea where that was coming from. But I thought, oh, maybe I could do something with this.
And would you, so when you hear, and I suppose this must, I'm curious to know how it's evolved over time. When you were young and you were just starting out as a composer, you heard something in your head, and then did you play it on the piano and then write the notes down as you were playing it?
Not initially. I mean, not initially. I was not skilled enough to write down what I heard at the time, because I was just a starting musician and composer, but I would hear things. I didn't know how to translate it to reality yet.
What made that translation possible?
Going to school, studying. And I had a really great education. I was very lucky to find a place that was a good fit for me. I mean, I loved improvisation. I loved jazz. I loved blues. I mean, Berklee was the right school for me. And at the time when I guess it was my third year, they were just starting a film music program, and I was in the first class of that. And I clicked with that particular teacher, and his name is Don Wilkins, and he was a huge inspiration for me in terms of wanting to do film music. And so,
And did you know at that point when you went to study formally that it was film scoring and composition that you wanted to pursue?
totally.
So what did it emanate out of a love of film?
I love film, yeah, and I love music. And I went, oh, I wonder if I could do this. I wonder if I could tell stories for film, with music in some fashion. And it was, I have no idea where that thought came, but it was the right thought. And growing up in Montreal, there was National Film Board, and it was, everyone held it as a place of reverence, you know, of all these beautiful short films and all of this artistic material. And yeah, so I wonder if I could do music for them, right? And how do I go about doing that? And so it kind of worked out in some miraculous fashion.
So you specialized in that. That was your focus at Berklee.
Totally.
And did you pick up any other instruments along the way as you were learning composition for film and underscoring all those things?
No, I mean, as a composition student, you have to learn other instruments, you know, and play them and learn how to finger them. And you know, so I had to play violin for a semester or two and trumpet for a semester and clarinet for a semester. My trumpet playing was so bad, my roommates made me practice in the closet with the bell of the trumpet in my laundry bag. It was horrific, a horrific noise. And yet, thankfully, I wasn't marked. My composition wasn't marked by my trumpet play.
But that's so interesting. So a composer has to have a familiarity with as many instruments, I would imagine, as possible in order to...
Yeah, you have to know how to write for them. You have to know what their ranges are. What are their sweet spots? What instrument could work with this film? Or what colors do you want to use? What's appropriate, et cetera, et cetera. You would never do everything just on piano. You need to color it, and to tell stories, you need different instrumentation, different ideas, different possibilities. An expansive palette.
What was the first film that you did musical composition for? Do you remember?
Yeah, I did. You know, in Boston, I did some, you know, student films, and they were okay. I mean, it was all a learning process, and I'm grateful for them. It was just a function of how do I get to the next level? How do I grow as a composer? How do I grow as a storyteller?
Did you set out then straight from Berklee to go to Los Angeles so you could score music?
I went to back to Canada. I went to moved to Toronto. And because of my education, I got a lot of opportunities right away. I became a composer's assistant, and he had hired me right away. His name was Paul Hoffert. And he was doing a bunch of movies, and I was orchestrating, you know, assisting, helping out, whatever needed, conducting. It was a hands-on education. What I learned from Paul was, you know, going to graduate school in terms of life experience and musical experience. And, you know, 23 or something at that point. And then he said he wasn't available to do something. So the CBC, Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, had asked him if he could do a pilot, and he wasn't available to do it. And I got that opportunity. And then I had a partner, Glenn Morley, at the time. And we started doing TV movies at the CBC and doing a series at CBC. And, you know, and it just kept growing, and I stayed in Toronto for about 13 years, and I had done, you know, many movies, a couple hundred episodes of TV. I was also working in commercials, and I did hundreds of those. So I had an incredible opportunity in Toronto that it was my opportunities exceeded my talents, but my craft grew significantly. And at a certain point, I realized that I wanted to move to Los Angeles because I could see my opportunities dwindling in Toronto in terms of what the budgets were getting smaller, so that the television budgets, I wouldn't be able to use live orchestra or live musicians as much. So I moved to Los Angeles. when I was 35.
And you've stayed there ever since?
Ever since.
What was the most challenging project for you?
Challenging in a good way. I've worked with directors who are incredibly musical and very specific, and they will call me out if things are even a frame late or two frames late, something like that. Or they'll hear something and it will be not exact. And there's very few people who have those kind of ears. There's a director that I worked in China with by the name of David Wu, who was unbelievably exacting and great storyteller, but he's also a director and an editor, so he knew everything inside out, and I had to really work with such specificity and clarity with him. And that was an amazing collaboration, because he pushed me in many, many ways. And I'm grateful.
So for you, the challenge is a director who's very exacting, and it's something that you actually feed off of, that kind of intensity, that kind of focus on detail.
Totally. Totally. I mean, the more input I get from people who are, he's also very musical. I mean, that's the other thing. And it's a great understanding of film music. He was also a composer. So he knew, he could tell me things with a different insight than other directors who are not as musical wouldn't be able to do.
Join Play On Premium to get merch like t-shirts, hoodies, and coffee mugs, ad-free episodes, and bonus content video featuring interviews with the actors, producers, playwrights, and directors who brought it all to life. Go to ncpodcasts.com and subscribe to Play On Premium to support the art and the artists.
What in your mind, or to your ear, makes for a great score or musical composition for film? What does it need to have to it?
It should be invisible. It should be felt and not heard. It should have tell the story with the same character and spice that the actors bring to it. It should tell the story in a unique way.
Ideally, is it something that you would get the story of a film just by listening to the score? I mean, if you listen to a score in isolation.
I don't want to hear scores that are generic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are many wonderful scores that are beautifully written but characterless. And I'm less, you know, they're incredible scores, but I want to hear something that has a uniqueness and a color palette that's different and a storytelling that's different.
What are some of your favorites?
There are hundreds of scores that I find inspiring. I was originally inspired by Henry Mancini, Jerry Goldsmith. Henry Mancini as a melodicist, Jerry Goldsmith from a dramaturgical perspective, from a coloristic perspective. And it goes through, I mean, you know, I'm a huge fan of Thomas Newman, people who have unique voices but tell stories beautifully.
Can you give us some examples of a Henry Mancini film that you love the score of?
Molly Maguire's Wait Until Dark. Really wonderful dramatic writing for me.
Dramatic in that it makes you feel something strongly.
Yeah. I mean, he was inside the characters versus being on the surface.
It sounds to me like great musicians are like great actors, transformational,
totally
invisible. Like, you don't see the actor, you see the character. Exactly. When you see great acting.
That's what I implied when I said you should be felt and not heard.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so you should feel it. You shouldn't even notice it.
Without calling anybody out, what would you say is an example of some bad scoring, bad composition for film or television? What does it get wrong?
You can't really call it bad in the sense that that's probably what the director wanted.
Mm.
Right? So a lot of composers have done scores that they may not have been proud of, but it's what the director wanted at the time. Doesn't mean they couldn't do something different and for a different director. So that it's hard to say. It's not bad work. It may not have dramatically inspired me, but there's a lot mm-hmm. of generic work that is people want and Hollywood wants that is just like, for me, feels insipid and on the nose. And it's just what's so. I'd prefer to do something that has a bit more character.
On the nose, meaning it tells you how to feel.
Totally.
In other words, it's something that's patronizing to a listener or to a viewer.
But that's probably what the director needed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's not necessarily patronizing. It's not a function of good or bad. It's a function of what's needed. And sometimes the director may say, oh, this doesn't quite work the way I'd hoped. Can you help me out? And so all of a sudden you're having to do a cue that may be bigger than you would ever want. But it's what's needed.
So is it possible that a great film is ruined by a terrible score?
Yeah, probably. I mean, absolutely. And I don't want to suggest what they are, but yeah, there's some that are just over the top, and I've written cues that are over the top, and I wish I could rewrite them. And it's just it's part of our art, is like figuring it out.
Where do you come in the process? Are you there from the very beginning? Does the director hire you in pre-production, or do you start scoring when there's a picture?
It varies. I prefer to come in early and to know the story and to think about it. And I will write themes as they're shooting, because it's just, I want to have the creative time. Frequently, and if you just get something at the end after it's edited, you're have limited creative time to suss things out and to shape ideas and to sit with them for a little bit. So you just have to write, and you come up with thematic material quickly and you go. I would much prefer to start earlier and to develop material and to bounce it off the director and to see if they'd like it, and hopefully they will.
So ideally, a film is being put together. The director comes to you and says, Lawrence, I'd like you to compose the music for this film. Mm-hmm. Here's the story. Here's who's in it. You start getting to work. Do you read the script first?
I will definitely read the script. I'll ask questions about who the characters are if I'm unclear. I will try to get as much direction early on as possible as to what's needed and how to tell the director's vision of the story. And just approach it that way.
Do you go on location?
I have.
Do you find it helpful?
It's usually because I was... for some of the projects, doing some music direction and had to work with live musicians on set. But for the most part, it's not that helpful.
Had you ever done Shakespeare?
Never.
Before The Tempest?
Never. I was absolutely intimidated and uncomfortable and felt incredibly awkward and privileged.
So this was a challenge, and in that sense, that's good, right?
Oh, amazing. It was like to have material that's been around for, you know, a couple of years, it's probably pretty good material. And I knew The Tempest, and I'd seen it and seen different versions of it. And I was extremely excited and felt very daunting, you know, to even think about it.
You knew Andy Wolk.
I worked with Andy on many movies over the years, and he's a good director and understands story and knows how music works. He gives me a lot of latitude, which I'm grateful for. He allows me to be creative, but he's very open from that perspective, and I'm very grateful.
When you found out you were going to do this project, or when you accepted, thank you for accepting doing it, by the way, the music is just phenomenal. And it's really a great privilege to have had you work on it. I'm just curious to know if when you agreed to do it, did you go back and look at any film versions of The Tempest, or did you just kind of want to start with a clean slate?
I did look at the version of The Tempest that Julie Taymor directed. And this composer that I is shockingly talented by the name of Elliot Goldenthal.
The one that leaps to mind for me, just that I knew of prior to this podcast of, you know, if anybody were to ask me, is there a film version of The Tempest, I would think of Prospero's books, that Peter Greenaway film. Did you ever see that one?
Yes, I did. Also amazing.
And the score in that one is so, I mean, it's kind of like it permeates the film as well.
I didn't go back to see that one. Once I saw what Elliot had done for the other Tempest, I figured I should stop and not get more unnerved by how the brilliance of other composers. I mean, it was just like, you know, otherwise inertia would set in and I would be really uncomfortable.
So similar, I mean, you know, for actors, I can imagine it's the same, right? You know, you're going to play Hamlet. How many Hamlets are you going to watch before you do your own? I'd imagine you really have to thread that needle between being intimidated and inspired, right?
Totally. Totally. And the cool thing is the language is inspiring, the story is inspiring. So at a certain point, I realized just surrender to the words and see where they take me. You know, surrender to the story and see what evolves.
So when you began working on this, were there certain core emotions or elements that resonated with you or feelings that came up for you?
You know, Prospero was a magician who was doing dark things for an intent to go back to Naples to get his daughter married. So there's positive and negative on both sides, and I wanted to figure out a thematic material that presented Prospero from a place of magic, a place of darkness, a place of light. And how do you go about doing that from a thematic perspective and from a coloristic perspective? And finding that, you know, all of that material.
You've been listening to the Play On Podcast bonus content series. You can learn more about the Play On Podcasts at Next Chapter Podcast's website, ncpodcasts.com. That's N as in next, C as in chapter, podcasts with an S at the end, .com, where you can find other Play On Podcast series and interviews, along with talk podcasts like the 500, the 10, beef with Bridget Todd, and a whole lot more. I'd like to thank Jeremiah Tittle, the founder of Next Chapter Podcasts, and my producer, Pete Musto. Our audio engineer and editor is Justin Cortez. Be sure to subscribe to Next Chapter Podcast for updates on all the latest content, and don't forget to rate and review our shows. I'm Michael Goodfriend, and I look forward to sharing more incredible works in the Play On Podcast series with you, along with lots of enlightening bonus content at Next Chapter Podcasts.
Next Chapter Podcast presents In the Cards, starring Connor Ratliff as Gil.
I'm not a loser, I'm just unlucky.
Stephen Boyer as his pal Lex.
Face it, Gil, we're failures.
The Walking Dead's Lila Robbins.
This man is a train wreck.
Chukwudi Awuji.
Look at your own lives. What is your destiny?
Jamie Ann Romero.
When the moment is right, stop shuffling.
Written and directed by Kevin Henderson. Subscribe today. Go to ncpodcast.com to learn more.
Next Chapter Podcasts.